Philadelphia area lawyer Gary Rosen has been practicing intellectual property law for the past 28 years. I sat down with him for a perspective on how radio first affected music copyright law.
When radio first arrived in the early 1920s, it was basically the internet of that era. It was as disruptive to the music industry as the internet's been over the last 15 or 20 years.
I guess it's pretty obvious, but why was it called the ether toy?
Well, first of all, it was viewed as a toy. It was not viewed as something that had serious ramifications other than in the military. But when it was thought of in terms of a way of presenting music, it was sometimes called the ether music box or the ether toy, just as a home recreational device.
How did it forever reshape the legal landscape?
Well, briefly, music up till that point was sold in a tangible form, usually printed sheet music that people could play on their home piano or sing with friends. There were some recordings and some piano rolls, but it was all sold in a tangible form, and the music industry could control it and make sure they made their profit on it. Radio came along, and suddenly that music was available to everybody for free. And that set the music industry back on its heels as they tried to figure out how to continue to operate as the gatekeeper that prevented music from becoming a totally remunerative enterprise.
Well, then how did the music industry respond?
In the 1890s, Congress created what's called the public performance right, so that in a musical composition, the copyright owner, usually the songwriter or the publisher, has the exclusive right to publicly perform that music. And upon the arrival of radio, the music industry concluded that a radio broadcast was a public performance that was subject to their exclusive right, and they demanded that the radio industry begin to pay royalties for that music. And the mechanism for doing that was that the composers and publishers in about 1914, almost 100 years ago, formed the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, a performing rights organization which became their agent for licensing that public performance right. And their means of doing that, if you think of the logistics of this, a radio station might have thousands of musical compositions in its library and play hundreds of them in any given month. So there'd be a lot of difficulty determining, is it subject to copyright? Who owns that copyright? And then going and negotiating a deal. And from the point of view of the composers and publishers, it was a logistical nightmare too. How do they police all that with hundreds of stations across the country, as well as hundreds of other music users? And their solution was to form this performing rights organization in which they pooled their copyrights and then licensed them on what's called a blanket basis. A radio station that takes a blanket license from ASCAP has the right to play every composition in the ASCAP repertoire as often or as little as it likes for the period of that license.
And ASCAP, will you just reiterate, what does ASCAP mean?
ASCAP is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. It was formed by mostly popular composers like Irving Berlin and John Philip Sousa and Victor Herbert in 1914. Specifically to enforce this public performance right. And from that time until just before World War II, they basically had a monopoly on that. And gradually, the membership increased at not just the popular composers, but also the classical composers, Schoenberg, Charles Ives, Igor Stravinsky, jazz composers like Louis Armstrong all became members as well.
Were the composers actually the members of ASCAP? Or were there publishers?
The way it worked then and the way it still works today is a composer affiliates with a performing rights organization. Now there are three, and their publisher joins as well. And the performing rights organization collects the royalties, makes a determination as to how that pool of royalties will be distributed. And for a particular composition, the split is usually 50-50 between the composers and the publisher. ASCAP will distribute based on what it has determined is the frequency with which a composition is performed. So then the royalty for White Christmas would go 50% to Irving Berlin and 50% to his publishing company. And of course, in the case of an Irving Berlin, he usually owned the publishing company as well. So.
So this was really a way that they could continue to make money as technology was evolving.
It eventually became the most important source of income for songwriters. By the time radio had matured in the 1930s, the royalties from radio far outstripped the royalties from sheet music, which was dying out as people no longer played the home piano, and it outstripped the royalties from recordings as well.
What are the performing rights organizations that are used in the jazz and classical world today?
All genres are licensed through three organizations today: ASCAP, Broadcast Music Incorporated, BMI, and a third called CSAC. Each one of those three has in their repertoire all the different genres. Now, traditionally, as I mentioned, ASCAP came along first and had a monopoly. The broadcast industry didn't like that. And just before World War II, they formed Broadcast Music Incorporated as a competitor. And they formed their own catalog of music. And in fact, in 1941, the radio industry boycotted ASCAP. In the year 1941, you couldn't turn on the radio and hear Irving Berlin or Victor Herbert or the Gershwins or Cole Porter because ASCAP music had been banned from the air. And that lasted for almost the entire year. And at that point, a peace broke out, and ASCAP and BMI have continued to share about 90% of the copyrighted music, with CSAC having the remainder.
This really is relevant to what's happening today and has relevance to the internet.
Well, sure. The system I've described has been in place since around the time of World War II, and everybody was satisfied with it. Everybody was doing very well by it. The internet came along 15, 20 years ago and did exactly what radio had done in the 20s, which was begin to offer music outside the established channels and in ways that people could get it for free. And much of what happened in the 20s, when radio went to Congress and sought exemptions, and they went to the court and sought exemptions from the copyright law, claiming we're public service or we publicize the music. Music industry should be grateful for what we're doing. The internet has interests have been doing all of that as well. And it's still, we're slowly reaching the point where rules are forming that will ultimately, I think, allow the music industry to go forward as a profitable enterprise, even in the internet era.
I think maybe in part you're referring to file sharing.
Well, sure, that was certainly an important part of it. And the recording industry has come down very hard on file sharers. But rules had to be made even for the legitimate, the Pandoras, the internet-based services. Rules had to be made for the satellite radio services. Now, we've been talking about the copyright in a musical composition. There's a separate copyright in a sound recording of a musical composition. And that came along much later. And the radio industry was grandfathered into a world where they don't have to pay to play a recording. They only have to pay for the composition. But for the satellite broadcasters and the internet broadcasters, they have to pay for the right to use the recording as well. So they have sort of a double whammy.
So actually that makes a huge difference in terms of how those two things are organized, doesn't it?
It does, and it makes a huge difference in the economics of those. And of course, the Pandoras of the world are in front of Congress right now trying to lower the rates they're paying for sound recordings. I would just want to emphasize that copyright has worked the way it was intended to work in this field. Copyright is given not as a gift to the composers, but it's meant to benefit the public by spurring creativity. And the performance right, and the fact that a mechanism was formed to actually enforce that performance right and create an income stream for composers, has had a tremendous impact on the quality and the variety of American music, popular, jazz, classical.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.